It's time for another installment of Josh's Library Corner. Today, he's discussing the new Book Talk viral suspense thriller, Ask for Andrea, by Noelle W. Eiley. So, Josh, what did you think of Ask for Andrea?
I loved it. I just finished reading it this morning. It's the story of three women who are all murdered by the same man that they meet on a dating app. They all are murdered and wake up as spirits. They exist among the living, but they can't really do anything to communicate with them other than very slightly. But it's a story about how the three of them separately, and then they come together as the story goes on, try to solve their own murders.
Ooh.
And try to get the murderer arrested, caught for it.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it was great. It's unique to see that conflict and struggle to try to affect something that's essentially impossible because they're dead and everyone else is alive. To see them figure out how to do that is really one of the coolest parts of the book. I was really satisfied with the conclusion. It was emotional, touching throughout. It was exciting, suspenseful. The emotions were real, even though the story is about the supernatural.
Thank you, Josh, for sharing your newest read from your library corner called Ask for Andrea. And as of October 28th, you can find the deluxe special edition trade paperback of Ask for Andrea with these gorgeous book edges wherever books are sold, but only for a limited time. While picking up your copy of Ask for Andrea at Books A Million, bookshop.org, or Thrift Books, or your favorite bookstore, check out the five other thriller suspense novels by author Noelle W. Eiley.
What it reads on the edge of the book is, "Dead Women Don't Forget."
Ooh.
It's a cool paperback.
Whether it's seeking overall health, improving negative symptoms, or managing weight, we are always looking for new ways to feel better and live healthier. The American Medical Association, along with many other trusted medical professionals, have found that the cornerstone of overall health is a happy, healthy gut. Gut health plays a crucial role in promoting proper digestion, enhancing immunity, and maintaining a healthy metabolism. When those elements come together, you feel better, digest properly, eliminate waste, and absorb more nutrients. Our guts affect everything from our energy levels and mood to weight management and longevity. To improve gut health, many of us have turned to probiotics or prebiotics in the hope that they will balance what is known as the gut microbiome. So what's better than prebiotics or probiotics? How about prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics all in one capsule? Bioma is just that. Bioma is scientifically formulated to help you rebalance your gut bacteria. To give it a try, visit gobioma.com/rain for 15% off your first order. Bioma is not a fat burner, weight loss pill, or stimulant, although one of the key ingredients has been found to reduce belly fat percentage in just 8 weeks. Just two of Bioma's delayed-release capsules before breakfast will have your gut on a reset journey. The delay ensures the probiotic actually passes through your stomach intact, delivering more active bacteria to your gut than 96% of other probiotics. Bioma is science-backed, third-party tested, and vegan. To get started on transforming your gut and overall health, visit gobioma.com/rain. That's gobioma.com/rain for 15% off your first order.
On November the 12th, 1981, two men and two women boarded a 51-foot yacht called the Freedom 2. They set sail from Sausalito, California. Their destination? Tahiti. The next day, in the early morning hours, two men struggled out of the icy Pacific Ocean at Stinson Beach, California. Just north of San Francisco, he explained to rescue workers that the night before, he had sent out distress signals when their sailboat was hit by a large freighter. He and his three companions had clambered into a rubber raft they had on board, but the raft hit sharp rocks and was torn in half. The two women were lost. The man who spoke with the rescue workers gave his name as Bob Dozier. He said the injured man was John Russell, who had captained their yacht, the Freedom II. The two missing women were Suzanne Russell, 30, wife of John Russell, and 20-year-old Kristen Tomlin, assumed to be Bob Dozier's girlfriend.
You know, and that's what threw up all the flares that blinded authorities from saying, hey, here's this 20-year-old girl that fell through the cracks here. So,
in our previous episode, I told the backstory of Kristen Tomlin, a 20-year-old woman who has been missing for 44 years. Almost all of the information in that episode came from the book Kristen, Can You Hear Me? And an interview I did with its author and friend of Kristen, Teresa Letcher. For those who loved and continue to miss Kristen, their biggest frustrations have come from what feels like a lack of investigation. There was so much hubbub surrounding the people Kristen was with last and their wild story that it seemed Kristen being gone didn't matter. Today, with the help of Kristen's friends, Teresa and Rhonda, I'll be telling the other side of the story, giving the background of the bad apples that crossed Kristen's path and altered her life completely. Yet again, keep a hold of your butts because I am coming at you with multiple players with multiple aliases in a story that spans multiple states, decades, and insurance scams. Our first character is John Paul Russell. He was born in June 1937 in Madison, Nebraska. His family made their way west and wound up in Los Angeles in 1940. Soon, the scammer in John's heart would draw him to Las Vegas. There, he married Sheila Kirk in November 1969. Their love wasn't meant to last, and in April 1971, John and Sheila were divorced. Strangely, my research shows John and his second wife, Suzanne Wright, were wed in March of 1971. I'm not sure if he ever got busted for bigamy or if the second marriage was just the catalyst for divorce. Another report said that they were wed 1 week after the divorce, but either way, that other relationship was probably a big reason Sheila excused herself from the picture. Suzanne Wright is our second player. She was only 21 when she and 33-year-old John married. In the book, Kristen, Can You Hear Me?, it's reported that by this time, John was already a felon, though I'm not sure what his crimes had been. Suzanne Wright is our second player. She was only 21 when she and 33-year-old John married. In the book, Kristen, Can You Hear Me?, it's reported that by this time, John was already a felon, though I wasn't able to find what those crimes had been. Suzanne and John met when 20-year-old Suzanne started working for him as his secretary at a boat and camper outlet store in Vegas. It's also reported that just a week after they were wed, they decided to hit their place of work and took the outlet for $85,000. Getting away with that haul, they decided to start their new lives in Hawaii, where they could open their own similar outlet. Unsurprisingly, it went bankrupt and they were on the move once again. While still in Hawaii, the couple met a man named Robert Bob Leroy Dozier at a bar in Honolulu. Robert is our third and final member of the main crew that I'll be discussing. There were plenty of other crimes committed between when these lovebirds connected and Kristen's disappearance. For details, get the book. For now, here's a very quick rundown. In 1977, Suzanne, now Suzanne Russell, financed some yachts but never sent any payments. Bob worked with her to create a dealership, but it never came to fruition, and people started getting pissed about not getting paid. Lawsuits for failure to pay rent and fraud were filed. The trio took off toward L.A.
And this was the couple that robbed their business?
They robbed their business, and then they were like, you know what? Let's start a yacht dealership.
Well, not their business, but their work. Is it where they worked?
They robbed their workplace, created a similar business. It went under. They started a, quote, dealership that didn't actually exist.
We're doing this one crime.
Yeah.
So that we can be legit.
Yes.
And then we'll be out of it forever.
Mm-hmm. We won't do any more bads. But they do.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes criminals don't get that they keep, they're not like.
That those choices are. What's leading to the
they're
fails.
They're inherently awful choices.
Right.
They never seem to grasp that. I guess because they want that easy money.
Or maybe it's like self-proclaimed mastermind. If I'm picking this out and doing this, I am the mastermind. Therefore, I'm a mastermind.
Well, we saw masterminds.
This is very much that vibe. Just you wait. Once in L.A., another man came into the picture, Doug Reinertsen. He was a former cop turned private investigator and a friend of John's. In October 1978, Doug purchased a sailboat for $50,000, and 3 months later, he and experienced sailor Suzanne took it out to go to Catalina Island. The 36-foot Shalom reportedly never made it to Catalina because it was struck by a whale and it sunk. The area does have a lot of whales, so that's not completely unheard of. Doug filed his insurance claim, got paid, and moved on with his life. At least until the Shalom was discovered in San Diego, not sunk. In 1979, the trio of Bob, John, and Suzanne wound up in Virginia City, Nevada.
Virginia City, is this the glorious metropolis that we heard about last week?
It is indeed home of the camel races, you'll recall.
And allegedly, alleged by me, to be the capital of clowning in Nevada.
That's correct. Once there, they decided their newest venture would be in saloon ownership. The Stage Stop Saloon was up for sale, and they saw an opportunity to make money from tourists in the same area as the old Washoe, where Kristen would end up working. There was an issue with their plan, though. John Russell had a felony on his record. Bob did have a charge of marijuana possession while he was in the Air Force in 68, but it didn't seem to have hindered his business as much as whatever John's felony was. Because of that felony, John could not get a liquor license. So it was decided the best way to keep the bar between the three of them and to obtain the license was to have Suzanne marry Bob. Wait, what?
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, I know.
What?
What?
John used the age difference between himself and his actual wife to convince the community of Virginia City that he was actually Suzanne's father, John Farrell. She was going by Sherry Ann Farrell, and Bob Dozier was her husband. Venturing to Carson City, they actually made it legal. I mean, it wasn't actually legal because they were committing bigamy, but this was pre-internet days, so they were able to be wed. This allowed for Bob to get the liquor license required to open the Stage Stop Saloon in January of 1980. You got all that?
I suppose. Yeah. What a messy little scam it already is.
Isn't it, though? In this same window of time, Kristen arrived in VC and eventually wound up working at the Stage Stop Saloon. A year later, Bob was living on a 51-foot ketch, the definition of which is a two-masted, fore- and aft-rigged sailboat with a mizzenmast stepped forward of the rudder and smaller than the foremast. I hope that was helpful for you. It certainly was for me.
In my mind, I'm picturing something that looks like out of the movie White Squall. Have you seen that one?
No, but I picture Dead Calm. I don't even know if it's
even
close.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it's a large sailboat.
It's a large sailboat. Wild Things.
Yeah.
You know? Damn.
So I don't know technically what makes a ketch a ketch or a keech a keech or whatever, but that's the definition. But basically, there's a big-ass sailboat is where he was living. And that boat was named Inspiration, and it was owned by Doug Reinertsen, that PI friend. And that boat was docked in L.A. So no, Bob and Suzanne, or Sherry, were not living as a married couple. She stayed with John, her actual husband. Bob wasn't working on the saloon because he was working on the next scam. Using one of his many aliases, Michael Hayes, Bob acted as a seller of a boat called Freedom 2. He then sold Freedom 2 to Bob himself, using the fake information. On June 20th, 1981, the boat Inspiration was reported stolen. Even though there were plenty of eyewitnesses who saw two men who looked like Bob and John board the boat in May with multiple suitcases, Doug was awarded over $100,000 for his insurance claim. Pre-internet, man, you can get away with anything. You make up all sorts of stuff.
My wife is my daughter.
Oh, that too.
Dead Calm, the movie, that yacht is a ketch.
Oh, wonderful. Good research.
The actual boat in that movie, the real boat, is called the Stormvogel.
Ooh. It's believed that the men took the boat up to Richmond, California, which is just outside San Francisco, where they repainted it and renamed it the Freedom 2. The boat and the men were well known in VC. They were even featured in the Mason Valley News in June of 1981 in a blip that read, quote, "We've got a group among us who surely deserve an honorary membership in the Virginia City Yacht Club or the Virginia City Canoe and Punt Club. All of the names aren't available at this time, but we do know that our own High Sheriff Bob Del Carlo and Pat Hogan sailed under John Farrell of the Stage Stop Saloon, from L.A. to San Francisco, no less, and under extremely foul weather. Pat corrected me that he still had his sea legs when he crashed the door of the Union Brewery Saloon. Sure, Pat. Anyway, congrats on a great sea voyage. Two things to remember from this article. John Farrell is actually John Russell, and he is apparently a very skilled sailor, even in bad weather. Remember that. There is also more about the sheriff in Kristen, Can You Hear Me? But I thought, you know what? We've already got enough plot and names going on. It's more about what he knew. There's some questions about how much did he know about this group of folks.
Is the shady sheriff?
Possibly shady sheriff, okay. Yes. And the girls actually knew him, Rhonda and Teresa. Mm-hmm. They spent a day with him, and she talks about that in the book. But so it's important, but not so much that I didn't want to add another name and make anything any more confusing.
And is it that he's withholding information?
Or just like, did you know that they were not actually married and, you know, you're out on the boat with them all day? Did you have a hint that this was not quite right? You would hope as a sheriff, but
they aren't all that perceptive.
As you've learned through
yes,
your work.
Yes, I'm doing some work right now about a particular police officer, and they're blind where they live.
Mm.
What water are they going on?
I think they were going out. So Virginia City is at the north end of
Nevada.
It's not far out of Reno. So I don't know how long of a drive it was, but they were going like out of the bay, out of San Francisco.
Oh, I see.
So probably like an hour, maybe 2 hours. In the summer of 81, the Stage Stop Saloon was listed in the paper for sale because a different sale was taking place. See what I did there? I mean, you can't see it, but
nautical.
That's right. The gang started telling their customers and the locals that Sherry's father, John, a.k.a. Suzanne's husband, John, had been hired by National Geographic to do a photo assignment in Tahiti. A very believable and reasonable lie.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest missing piece of the mystery lies right in this portion of the timeline. After selling the saloon, the group made plans to start their sail to Tahiti of the Freedom 2 that fall. It's unclear how Kristen came to be part of the plan. Was she simply an employee who learned of their upcoming adventure and wanted to get even further from Portland and all of the bad memories it held? You might remember the note that was sent to Teresa from Kristen right before she disappeared, which I read at the end of our last episode. In it, she said, "I fell in lust with a single man a week ago, and that has added spice to my life, too. Nothing real serious, which is nice to enjoy myself without heartaches and bullshit. Not longing anything or anyone feels great." It's believed the single man she was talking about could have been Bob. Perhaps Kristen was close enough to the group. Maybe they even trusted her because she was kind of just a kid. And perhaps she knew about the fake marriage to Sherry and knew Bob was single. And maybe she started a relationship with him. Perhaps that relationship was the catalyst for her joining them on the boat. Whatever the reason, on November 12th, 1981, Kristen, John, Bob, and Suzanne boarded the Freedom 2, setting sail from Sausalito, California, supposedly heading for Tahiti, though it is believed Kristen did not inform anyone in her life about what the plan was for this trip or how long she would be gone. For those who aren't familiar with Northern California, I'll try my best to explain the layout of their travel. Sausalito is located inside the San Francisco Bay. It's on the northern side of the Golden Gate Bridge, with San Francisco to the south. The boat would have to have gone south, turned west under the bridge, and then they could get out of the bay. They would then go north to get out to the ocean and make the 4,000-mile journey to Tahiti. The morning after setting sail, a driver was headed down Highway 1 near Stinson Beach, which is directly across from Sausalito, but on the ocean side. It's a 15-mile drive, but it's much closer as the crow flies. The driver was shocked to see a man who was in bad shape waving him down. The driver stopped, and the man said that he had been in a boating accident and he needed help. The man got in the car and was driven to the closest gas station. The man introduced himself as Bob Dozier and asked to use a phone. The employee at the station said the man was, quote, looking wet and tired, as he explained there had been a boat accident and he needed to contact the police. Once authorities arrived, he explained he had a friend who was still at the beach, unable to walk because of an injury. Rescuers returned to Stinson Beach and found John there with a bruised leg and an injured ankle. He was airlifted to the hospital. Both men, who had crawled out of the ocean and held on to a cliffside overnight, were taken to the hospital to be checked out and interviewed. The men, who were, quote, very devastated and very shocked and couldn't think on their own, according to Chief Ken Rand of the Stinson Volunteer Fire Department, reported that they had been living on the boat for the previous 6 months and had to leave that day, even though there was treacherous weather, because they didn't want to miss the guy that they were meeting in Tahiti to sell the boat. They then said that they got Freedom 2 out of the bay, started having generator problems, and decided to turn back to Sausalito. About 15 miles north of San Francisco, the generator was the last of their concerns as their little boat was supposedly struck by a massive freighter. On top of that, a storm was coming in which caused zero visibility. The crash caused them to lose power, which meant no steering or rudder, and they began taking on water. At 6:30 p.m., they sent an SOS distress signal on their radio and shot a flare. 3 hours later, the boat's anchor became wedged between some rocks. Forcibly held in place, the already damaged sailboat couldn't withstand the impact of the storm and it was destroyed by waves. Equipped with an 8-foot life raft, everyone got in and put on a life jacket. The peace the raft provided didn't last long as the 15 to 18-foot waves continued to bash into them and it eventually threw the raft into sharp rocks, tearing it to shreds and throwing Kristen and Suzanne into the violent ocean. The men were able to hang on and eventually wound up on the beach where they came crawling out of the water. It was a harrowing and nearly unbelievable story. The men were treated at the hospital. John's injuries had him staying overnight for monitoring. Something that was alarming to the hospital staff was that neither man showed any sign of hypothermia, a condition they would have had if they had been in the cold ocean waters for the 12 hours they reported.
Whoops.
Uh-huh. The day after the men were found, Bob picked John up from the hospital and they left for Las Vegas. This was also incredibly alarming. Officials in the area had dealt with plenty of boat accidents and missing people who were visiting from out of town. And they had never dealt with people who had loved ones who were missing in the ocean who left town without knowing where they were or if anyone was okay. Later that day, John called the Coast Guard. He apologized for having a foggy memory, but he did want to update them on who exactly they were looking for. See, in the chaos of everything, they had simply forgotten to mention the third woman who was with them and also missing. Her name was Sherri-Ann Dozier, and she was married to Bob, but they thought she had perished when she hit her head on some of the rocks. You'll recall, Sherri-Ann is Suzanne. This was a bizarre twist for the Coast Guard. How do you go 2 days telling multiple people what happened and you completely forget another person? For those of us who know the background, we know he was making this call to keep up their ruse of Suzanne being married to both men. As soon as the men had been rescued, search teams set out to find the boat, the raft, and the two, now three, missing women. The Coast Guard spared no expense, utilizing ships, helicopters, infrared cameras, and divers, but nothing was found. At the same time, officials were retracing the steps of the men and the Freedom 2. The owner of the marina they set sail from, Rick Wood, was interviewed. He had met Cheri, but in the 6 months the boat had been there and he had talked to the group, there were only ever four people, two men, two women. It was later argued that perhaps the third woman had just been below deck during all the occasions in which Rick was there. To me, they're taking the opportunity to kill off Cheri. And he gets to keep the business. They get to be married. It kind of works itself out.
Do you think she was actually on the boat or did they kill her at another place?
I believe in time? Suzanne was on the boat.
Okay.
And you'll find out why soon.
Tease.
That's right. The surveyor who inspected Freedom 2 2 months before it was lost said Bob introduced himself as a writer for National Geographic, Cruising World, and Sea and Pacific Skipper. Bob also said that he had purchased Freedom 2 in Taiwan in 1977 and had sailed it great distances. Not a word of his story was true. Kristen's family was eventually called and informed of the wreck and that she was missing at sea. Bob and John contacted her father and informed the family that they would be coming to Portland to meet them and to answer any questions they had about the accident. Instead, they ghosted Kristen's family and never contacted them again. 2 days after the men were found, the Coast Guard made a surprising announcement. They did not feel the Freedom 2 had sunk. After all of their searches, they found nothing. No sign of a wreck, no bodies, no items washed ashore. For a boat of that size, they should have found something. They expected at the very least to find some lockers, food, furniture, cushions, wooden spoons, paper, tabletops, floorboards, the usual things they would find floating after a sinking of this nature.
A life jacket.
So many things actually float in a boat. Something would have found its way out.
A beer koozie.
Well, there was nothing until the next day when something did wash ashore. It was multiple small, unimportant pieces of a boat, including a chunk of wood that read OMII, as in the end of Freedom 2. Looking closely, it appeared the pieces had not been busted apart from hitting rocks, but had been pried apart and they bore hammer marks. Another clue, a life jacket with Freedom 2 on it was found. Turning it over, officials saw faint, faded writing. Making it out, it read Mauna Kea, which was the name of another ship that had been supposedly lost at sea years earlier.
So, okay. Their
deal is ship flipping.
Boat fraud?
Boat fraud. They love to take a boat, repaint and rename a boat, lie about it being lost, which makes sense. You can't prove it. It's not a car where you go, hey, here's my totaled car on the side of the road. You go, oh, lost at sea.
It's in Davy Jones' locker.
Yep.
Good scam.
It's working for them.
The ocean does tend to be the ultimate garbage can.
Yes.
Things go and don't return.
5 days after the ordeal, Bob and John had their attorney, Gerald Gillick, hold a press conference in Las Vegas, a location he claims they chose to escape the newspapers of California and to find a family member of one of the women. Now their story was that they were struck by a freighter further out in the ocean. Sherry Ann was swept overboard and smashed to death on the rocks. The other two women were knocked out of the raft just as the men had been. They even provided two different descriptions for each woman and had the nerve to blame the Coast Guard for the confusion. 2 days later, the Coast Guard and Marin County investigators went to Las Vegas to speak with the men themselves. During the five-hour meeting with the Coast Guard and Marin County investigators, the men presented another new story. Now it wasn't three women, but they were back to two. Sherry wasn't John's daughter. She was his wife, and they had been using an alias. Bob claimed to have made it to shore, where he then pulled John out of the water. He saw Kristen struggling ashore, but a, quote, large backwash took her right back, and he didn't see her again. Soon after that meeting, the men fired their lawyer, or he had a moment of conscience, and quit. They were at least smart enough to not make a claim on the boat. After that meeting, the two men fully ghosted the investigation. They left no contact info, so if their friend and wife had been found, there was no way of letting them know. Even though the men involved in the accident were out of the picture, an investigation continued. The findings were bizarre and concerning. The Coast Guard did believe two women were lost at sea, and in some manner, the Freedom 2 had sunk. However, there was no sign or indication a flare had ever been launched. There was no documentation or record of an SOS being sent on the radio. No freighter was found to have been in the area at the time they claimed to have been struck. There was never any debris that would have been conducive to an accident. The storm they claimed to have been caught in came at a different time and wouldn't have affected them when they said. Stinson Beach, where the men bravely crawled out of the water to save their own lives, it was 22 miles north of San Francisco, but they claimed their crash was 15 miles north and the currents wouldn't have put them there. Nor would it have made sense to head north if you're trying to go to Tahiti. The final nail in the BS coffin was that the Coast Guard monitoring ship was located just 3 miles from where all of this supposedly took place. So if they had sent a flare signal or had been struck, that ship would have noticed or been notified.
Whoops.
Whoopsie doodle. I like that they're like, it's the water. Nobody knows what's going on out here. We'll just make up whatever we want.
Kings of the sea.
There was a storm and a freighter. And they're like a little kid. I was doing my homework and then lightning struck my desk and my desk then caught on fire.
They should have just said the boat started taking on water and we couldn't stop it. And it sank.
A wave struck us at a weird angle and the girls went over and went, yeah.
So simple. Like, yeah. Godzilla came from the ocean and smashed us to pieces.
Now, it's helpful that they did that because then everyone goes, hmm.
It'd be real tough if their story was believable.
Exactly. Yeah. If they had come in and just said like, oh, my God, this wave and they were distraught and stuck around, this story would not be known. There wouldn't be a story.
All they had to do was play it cool.
So I'm thankful that they were that stupid and incompetent, because otherwise it would have just been like, oh, Kristen's lost at sea. A few days later, more items were found on that beach, such as papers, vials, and other items familiar to local law enforcement as methods used to transport cocaine by sea. The area was known for drug trafficking, so it was impossible to tell if the items had already been there, if they washed up from another boat, or if the Freedom 2 was being used to transport drugs to Tahiti or somewhere else. Looking further into the recovered piece, which had Mona Kai written on it previously, investigators learned the Freedom 2 was actually the reported stolen and repainted Inspiration. Now officials knew they were dealing with more than just a boat wreck. News outlets barely reported on the initial wreck and that two women were missing at sea. The story didn't get bigger coverage until the twisted tale of the people involved started to come to light. And all of that drama completely overshadowed that Kristen was not only missing, but she hadn't been involved in any of their scams. She appeared to be a victim, but no one was speaking up for her. Eventually, the men came clean to the Coast Guard and explained that they were both married to Suzanne / Sherry. They weren't worried about pursuing legal action on the bigamy, as it was Nevada's problem, and Suzanne was the actual bigamist, but she was missing. So the guys aren't charged because they are the spouse. She's the one married to multiple people, but she's lost at sea. Very convenient. Investigators were bothered by many aspects of the case. A month after the events, the Coast Guard announced that there was no evidence that supported the story of the Freedom 2 sinking. Coast Guard Commander Jim McCartan said when their part of the investigation was through, quote, "It's not Coast Guard business to investigate people's sexual habits, their different names, or drugs." By November 26th, Freedom 2's false identity was discovered and the first proof of a hoax started to reveal itself, like how they traced the boat's purchase to Michael Hayes in Florida, only to discover that was another one of Bob's aliases.
Dang!
He keeps selling boats to himself.
Bob, you little silly goose.
I know, they're just scamping all over the place. Scam, scamp. The legal investigation shifted their focus from what had happened that night on the water to what might have happened before and after that led to the boat being lost. In early 1981, Doug purchased the Inspiration for $75,000. He docked it in L.A. and hired Bob and John to repair it and get it set for sale. The owner of the Old West Gun Room in Richmond said that they spoke about piracy for hours and how they were setting out on a 2-year around-the-world sailing adventure.
What's the Old West Gun Room?
Well, that's a gun store. And they were buying guns because they were so worried about the pirates on the sea.
Okay.
And obviously, this is another version of their story. Now they're telling this owner of the gun shop, oh, we're going on a 2-year sailing adventure. Well, that's not going to Tahiti for National Geographic.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. And for the record, all of those publications said, no, this dude does not work for us. What are you talking about?
I think they're just trying to save face.
So, yes, the guys bought some guns to have with them on their sailing adventure. And those guns were expensive. But as the owner of the shop said, quote, how much would you spend to protect a $250,000 boat? In December, a month after Kristen and Suzanne were last seen, it was discovered John and Suzanne had purchased a rifle, a shotgun, and a survival rifle, which folds into a floating case, a week before they set sail. Supposedly, they were going to be used to protect themselves from pirates as they were sailing such a far distance. Kenneth Tomlin, Kristen's father, spoke to the Oregonian on November 20th, discussing his concerns for his daughter and how he smelled a rat in the story, saying, quote, I would like to talk directly with the two survivors of the wreck. There are a number of strange things about it. On May 18th, 1981, witnesses saw two men who matched the descriptions of Bob and John take the Inspiration out on the water. 3 weeks later, Doug reported it stolen and received an insurance payout of $110,000, which would be nearly $400,000 today. Before they disappeared, the men told investigators that neither the women nor the boat were insured. So how could all this be a scam? Tracing the path of the boat, it was found Bob and John had sailed it to San Francisco, where they repainted it and created a phony registration, renaming it Freedom 2. Fast forward to that November, the guys were telling all of the dock buddies about their big plan to get to Tahiti. A year after the boat Kristen and Suzanne were lost at sea, November 17, 1982, there was an arrest in the case, and it was Doug Reinertsen, the PI, the friend, the owner of the Inspiration. At the time, Doug was the chief investigator of the Las Vegas Public Defender's Office. He was also, and you're not going to believe this, a former Clark County Sheriff's Deputy. Doug was charged with insurance fraud related to Freedom 2. He probably wasn't losing too much sleep about the charges. He had been in trouble for the same thing back in 1983 when he claimed his boat Shalom had been sunk by a whale, if you will recall.
I forgot about the whale.
Yes.
They're like, well, it was a whale before. We got to go bigger. We got to go freighter. Next time, actually Godzilla.
For that infraction, he pled no contest and he was sentenced to pay the insurance companies back and he served 6 months in jail. So not ideal, but not life-ruining conviction. Probably worth the risk of getting all that money.
Mm-hmm.
Warrants were also issued for John and Bob once it was realized there was a complicated insurance scam happening between the men. Just one more juicy story to distract from Kristen's disappearance. John and Bob were traced to a condo in Hawaii, but by the time authorities caught up to them, they had been gone for 2 weeks. They were now on the lam and wanted for fraud. Investigating the men's business in VC, it was reported that John and Bob were rumored gold investors, paying the previous owner of the saloon $8,000 in Krugerrands, South African gold coins, for his bar supplies. Questioning former employees of the saloon, it was said that John had stashed gold in his upstairs apartment and had told of plans to melt it down, plant it in the prow of the Freedom 2, which is a portion of the ship's bow, which is above water, and take it to Israel because of the higher value there. No one in town knew the name Russell. The group was tight-knit, paid for things in gold, and there was never a doubt who Sherry was married to. She called John, her actual husband, her dad, and was affectionate with Bob when at the bar. Although it was noted that there were occasions in which Sherry and Papa John were a little uncomfortably close.
Paying for things in gold is very Nevada to me.
Yes.
That's some old
the gold
cowboy
rush.
Shit. Yeah.
And also, not surprised it's scammers. I feel like every ad I see, or perhaps political figure that I see hawking some gold.
Con artist.
Is not known for not being a scam. I know gold is valuable and I know it's like, oh, it's out of the bank. But there comes a time where it crosses a line into melting it down and putting it in your boat, you know? For the next 6 years, the case was quiet. The guys were who knows where, living their lives, presumably scamming everyone in their path, while those who cared about Kristen continued to wonder what happened to her. In an attempt to help apprehend Bob and John, the story was featured on Unsolved Mysteries in November 1988, 7 years after the sinking. Incredibly, it helped. Watching the show that night was Bill and Betty Rocher of Ontario, Canada. Showing pictures of Bob, John, and Suzanne, Bill and Betty were shocked to hear those names. They knew, not just Bob and John, as Bob Johnson and John Smith, respectively, they knew Suzanne, who was now going by Ann Christine Smith, and she was alive.
This is Bob Johnson, and I am John Bobson.
Basically, I know. What a stretch, guys. We here at Murder in the Rain are so excited, elated, overjoyed to say that we are sponsored by newspapers.com, our favorite website. The hardest part for me for using newspapers is staying focused and staying on track.
Stopping is the hardest part of using newspapers.com. I will just go down any old rabbit hole for as long as I want. I'll see a word or a reference to some stupid movie and I go, farewell, life. I'm in the newspaper
today.
Hole now. It's true.
For us and for anyone else who's either casually into true crime or maybe you also do a podcast or you're a writer, you have to have newspapers.com. I can't tell you how many cases I have added to our list just based off of other columns that I found while working. And that includes serial killers. That includes cases I've never heard of. And I'm like, do people know that this was a serial killer? Because I've pieced together it was because of my newspaper scrolling.
A lot of things we would not have heard of otherwise without the newspaper
archive. Oh, yeah.
Things that are just not covered in any other fashion.
And what I always appreciate is even though some details might be different because of the journalist or the time, there's always that one little snippet, that one little fun fact that we haven't seen anywhere else that we found in that one article that really adds to the story. And that's always exciting.
Yeah, if you keep going, you will keep finding.
Yes. Ooh, that's a good tagline.
Thanks.
Newspapers.com. Keep going, keep finding. To get started on your own newspapers.com journey, go to newspapers.com/crime. When you sign up, use discount code MURDERINTHERAIN to get 20% off. We dare you to sign up, look up a date, a location, a famous crime, or a person, and just try to not spiral for the rest of the day. That's newspapers.com/crime using discount code MURDERINTHERAIN. Bill and Betty had met Suzanne, a.k.a. Anne, back in 1982 when they sold her a boat. They paid 10% of the asking price, then dipped. For half a year, the couple watched as they tracked their boat from port to port. It eventually ended up in Florida, and they reported it. Anne was ordered to return the boat and pay Bill and Betty $48,000. That was nice and all, but it was pretty moot as the trio was once again on the run. This was helpful news. If Suzanne was alive and appeared to have been part of the hoax, maybe Kristen was still alive too. The next sighting of the three was in Texas a year later, in Hawaii in 1986. A report of Bob being in BC seemed legitimate as his father worked at the Bank of Montreal.
Also, boat fraud seems fucking exhausting.
Oh my God.
So much work to fraud a boat.
I gotta paint it. I gotta move it.
I gotta sink it.
I gotta live on it.
I gotta pretend to crawl out of the ocean.
Yeah. No, thank you. No,
just sit on the beach all night. You'll get hypothermia. Sit in the water. Put your butt in the water. You're gonna be
sick. It's November in Northern California. God. It's not warm. Yeah. It would take until 10 years after Kristen and Freedom 2 were last seen for arrest to be made. On April 19th, 1991, Robert Dozier, now 44, was arrested in Hawaii. He was located, thanks again, to a viewer of a rerun of the Unsolved Mysteries segment who recognized him. I know, right?
Bobby Stack.
The segment re-aired again in 1993, and a viewer in Eugene, Oregon, recognized John as John Farrell, a roof installer in the area. The FBI came to Oregon, located John working on a roof, and arrested him. He was also wanted in Florida for suspicion of posting a fraudulent vessel title and a boat with an altered ID number. The men were taken to court in California and convicted of insurance fraud, for which they served a whopping
3 years.
6 months.
Oh!
Definitely worth all of the effort of a 10-year investigation. It is unclear what became of the charges against John in Florida. Because of the complicated nature of this case and that it was before the digital age, there isn't a lot known about what happened to the individual parties. Robert Dozier, a.k.a. Bob Dozier, Michael Hayes, Bob Johnson, passed away in 2017. He was 70 years old. John Paul Farrell, a.k.a. John Russell, J. Paul Russell, John O'Farrell, John Paul Farrell, J. Paul Farrell, John Farrell, Papa John, Smokey, Josh Smith, Don Smith, has been out of the papers and courts since his release. There's no information available about his current whereabouts or if he is still married to Suzanne. Speaking of Suzanne, a.k.a. Suzanne Wright Russell, Sherrianne Dozier, and Christine Smith, her whereabouts are also unknown. She was a decent sailor, so it is theorized the men hopped into the water and she took the Freedom 2 to another port to meet up with her husbands. She could have done the same in her later years, or perhaps she and John sailed off into the sunset and have been dealing in gold in some faraway land. In December 1982, the Stage Stop Saloon was once again for sale, this time for $75,000. So, there you have it. That's the story of the three parties involved in Kristen's disappearance. As with any case that goes unsolved for this many years, the big C, closure, remains elusive.
No closure, really. Like, you're always just wondering, like, is she, like, some days I'm like, gosh, is she going to just show up, you know? And then other days I'm just so convinced that it's something off, you know, and there's just no closure.
You talk to people who are like certain that she was murdered and that she's no longer with us, which I can believe, but there's no evidence or proof. So there's always this glimmer that maybe she took off and maybe she's still alive. And when I first published the book, Ingram Spark is who I used to self-publish, and they have a, it's called Global Connect. So people outside of the United States can buy the book. And shortly after it was released, I was looking at where it had sold, and I saw that there were 3 copies sold in Germany. And my first thought was, oh, well, there must be some true crime enthusiasts in Germany, but nowhere else other than the United States, just as Germany. And then a couple days later, there was one more sale in Germany. And I just started with this fantasy and this hope of, oh, well, maybe Kristen's in Germany. So there's just this always little glimmer and flicker of maybe, and really, who knows? And without evidence and proof, I guess we just will remain in this space.
Teresa, your book, Kristen, Can You Hear Me? It's excellent, full of so much information about Kristen and her life and disappearance. I'm curious what the response was from those who knew Kristen.
What I noticed is there was a response from a girlfriend of ours from high school that, oh my gosh, I didn't know Kristen was missing, because it was after we had graduated from high school, you know, and we were all right about 20 and 20-year-old busy, you know, doing our own things and becoming what adults. So there was that kind of that group of folks being thankful. Also on our high school site on Facebook, I made a note on there, and other people were the ones that remembered. So yeah, this is sad, and I'm still sad. And then just yesterday, we have the Kristen, Can You Hear Me? We have a Facebook site, just a couple reasons. One, because there is no closure. You know, if she's passed, there was never a funeral or, you know, any kind of celebration of life or anything. And then just still missing. So it's a place for people to remember, to talk about her case, all of the above, for us to group together. But her nephew, Kristen's nephew, joined us yesterday. He is one of 4 siblings of Kristen's brother, Carrie. And I didn't even know Carrie had children. So it was very nice to hear from him. And he is one of 4 siblings of Kristen's brother, Carrie. And I didn't even know Carrie had children. So it was very nice to hear from him. And they're thankful. They've been curious. You know, he was born in 82, so he never met Kristen. But he and his siblings still look into it. He said every few years they check the internet to see if there's any news or any mention about Kristen. So they're still checking, even though they never met her. And they seem pretty excited that we were on this side of things, and just kind of that meeting saying, hey, here we are. And there they are, too. That was really nice. It actually was very exciting for me for him to reach out, and he has the other sibs, and it looks like they have joined as of today. I've seen a couple others join that Facebook group, so that's nice.
Of course, if you have any information about Kristen, that is helpful. It doesn't have to be the piece of the puzzle that solves the case. It could be a memory. It could be photos. In fact, some of the brighter moments from all of this for Teresa has been receiving photos from Kristen's family members.
And we got a bunch of pictures we had never seen as well. Like, that was super cool. Like, it almost brought me to tears. Actually, her birthday was yesterday. And Teresa's birthday is on the 3rd. And then my birthday is the 16th. So we were like the Libra trio that just, you know. So it's just weird, too, that it's all happening kind of in October. And I don't know. It's just really cool.
And we just both looked at them this morning. And we've been texting back and forth about the photos, and you know, you see Kristen in her braces, and I know during that time was when she was seeing that teacher, and there was a picture that her nephew sent of her in braces. I'm like, oh my gosh, she was just a baby. That man was just such a anyway, how he changed the trajectory of her life, you have to wonder. Yeah, would she have moved to Virginia City? I'm sure she would have visited, because her mom was there every once in a while. But would she have moved down there and found these bad actors? And, you know, would her life have ended up, or her path ended as whatever it has? She was a very special, unique person, very open, and enjoyed people in a way that I really haven't seen in the 40 some years since. I think she got a bum rap with the teacher. I think that was a, you know, just a horrible thing that happened in her life. And then to get away from that and to finally feel strong and then to meet these other people that end up leading you to the end of the life that you knew or the end of your life, I think that's another terrible circumstance for a young woman to have gone through. So I've always been very frustrated that these things happen to a nice person and frustrated that there was never any investigation about her alone, that we still don't have any answers. And also when I retired, so I, you know, I've always wanted to do something, anything for Kristen, but just, you know, when you're working and I'm not a writer, it's not my comfort zone. And so I started a few times even while I was still working and wanted it to be perfect and rigid like a history book. And so I'd scrap it. And it wasn't until after I retired where I just kind of found this kind of just let go the areas that I don't know. I, you know, use fiction. That's what writing's about. So there was that. There's retirement and then just the ongoing kind of frustration, kind of the ongoing kind of persistent wonder and grief.
Now let's take a look at a sample of the endless theories surrounding Kristen. The first question is, why was she on that boat? She could have been dating Bob, but would that have been strange or discussed by locals since they thought Sherry was his wife? Had she expressed interest in leaving VC or pining for an adventure like the one that they were supposedly about to embark on, and maybe they decided to give the kid an opportunity while seeing her perhaps as a pawn? Were Bob and John involved in the drug trade and they were actually going to transport drugs as part of that sale? Possibly. But like anything involving the hoax or scam, there was just no proof or history that would imply Kristen would have known about it or had gone along with it.
Depends on how connected she was to them at that point, like how much she really had grown to trust them before she found out. So if she was totally in love with this guy, either one of them, I know her, she would have given her 100%. So I think she would have. And Kristen was a believer. I was full of fear. I trusted no one. She trusted everyone. And I kept telling her, you're going to get hurt. I would say, you can't trust these people. Like you do not just in general, like I saw weirdness everywhere. And so I was I just don't think that she, you know, I totally think she must have been fooled or just, yeah, tricked or I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said before, she really enjoyed people. She enjoyed getting to know them. And she did that. You're good people. I can very much see her perhaps getting to know them. Maybe they were nice and interesting. And to Kristen, down to earth, and they were good people in her mind. So even if they were involved in, so it was insurance fraud, and I can see her looking beyond their illegal activities if they were her kind of people, if they were good people and down to earth.
I will say we have no idea what her mindset was, as the letters to friends and family around this time were pretty vague. She could have very well been acting out in response to the childhood that she lost to Doe and thought, hey, why not see where all this leads? Without that proof, it's nearly impossible for Kristen's loved ones to believe she willingly left on the boat knowing that there were drugs or an insurance scam involved. She just wasn't that kind of person. So let's say Kristen was just kind of mixed up with the group, unaware of their nefarious dealings, and wanted to take a trip of a lifetime. One theory is, as much of a stretch as it might be, it's possible the guys were telling the truth. They maybe fibbed about some of the details, but maybe something led to a wreck and Kristen was lost in the water. That could be the case if there was a rogue wave or some sort of accident that led Kristen, the least experienced sailor of the group, to go overboard.
You know, you look at this story. John told people in Virginia City that he was going to write for National Geographic and Bob was going to sail the Pacific, which if you head out of in San Francisco, you hang a left. And all these the story of what they reported occurred, being hit by the freighter and this big storm hitting, all these things that we know did not happen. They had taken a right, you know, it was north. So I just was pondering what could have happened to go north. This is all so strange. I mean, all these things that probably didn't happen in the direction that they were supposed to have been going. So I just kind of thought about what would happen if they went north, tried to sail north. And then I did know that John had family up in Canada. So just kind of rolled from there that maybe they were heading north. And there were some elements of that I thought, you know, Rhonda touched on earlier, maybe there was an accident, because in Storm Target, there was the storm that actually occurred, the Friday the 13th storm. And had they gone north, they would have been sailing when that storm occurred. And then to Rhonda's point, that's the scenario where Kristen falls overboard. Is that something that happened? Was it the insurance fraud and Kristen fell overboard, or something else happened? So,
to avoid legal issues or getting caught with the fraudulent boat, they concocted the sinking story.
To me, that was kind of the foundational scenario. It was confirmed that it was the stolen inspiration, you know, that they'd done the work to turn it into the Freedom 2. Maybe they were going to try again. I don't feel that the story of the Freedom 2 sinking happened at all. So I think that was a thought, or maybe that's what they were trying to do. But then there were too many questions. So I think that one is a kind of a foundational piece and part of what they did, you know, as part of what Bob, John, and Suzanne did. And I never was able to find any story about the Mauna Kea other than what I got from the news and my articles that I've saved when it happened, and that it had been reported lost at sea years ago. So I don't know if that was part of their doing as well. I just assume at this point that it was, because I haven't been able to find anything. And even before I started the book, I worked with a local private investigator, and it's so old, he really couldn't find anything regarding the Mauna Kea either. So I do think that was their kind of area of what they thought was expertise. It was their thing. And that always stuck in my mind, because as I was waiting for reports in the newspaper back then, the Journal and the Oregonian, that was a story that came out that made me just go, oh my God, you know, they started finding the drug paraphernalia and the Coast Guard was kind of leaning in that direction. And I thought, no, I don't think Kristen would be involved in that. And, you know, there was never any proof. They couldn't tie any of those vials and papers to the Freedom 2. And then they did report that there were two major drug busts that had occurred right in that area where John and Bob supposedly had swam to shore. So that was really the only reason for adding that one, because it was such a big story in my mind at the time when it broke in the newspaper.
Then there's the theory that Kristen was straight up murdered. There wasn't any benefit to the group if Kristen was dead. There was no insurance going to them, no known hidden treasure. So that leads us down the road of her finding out about the scams and maybe getting upset to have been tangled up in such a mess. Suzanne could have been talking about meeting up with the guys after the fake sinking, and maybe Kristen freaked out. And so to protect their plan, they had to kill her. The most hopeful of all of the theories is that Kristen also sailed off and started a new life far away from all of her problems in history. Maybe she did hitch a ride all the way to Tahiti. To this day, she's still there, enjoying the beaches and a cocktail. However, since there has never been a sighting of Kristen, no communication between her and loved ones, or use of her social security number, it's really kind of hard to imagine that this was the choice she made.
I was going to say that as I was writing these, I'm like, well, I could go on and on with this, because there's no proof or evidence to really say what happened to Kristen.
So there you have it. The bizarre, twisting, curious tale of Kristen Tomlin's disappearance and the scams perpetrated by Bob Dozier, John Russell, Suzanne Russell, and Doug Reinertsen. It's funny how things like this work out. I had not heard of this case before being contacted by Teresa. The timing worked out to do the interview when we did, and lo and behold, this episode, the second part, is out on the 11th, one day before the 44th anniversary of the last time Kristen was seen alive. And I kind of hope that that's a sign of something good to come from this. A sighting, confirmation, news of any sort. In her last note to her friends, Kristen wrote, "Remember me? Miss me. Tell anyone who cares that I said hi, and do not forget about me."
And the last phone call I had with her, too, was really weird because she was sneaking. And I thought that was really weird. Like, why was she sneaking to call me? You know, she couldn't tell them that she was reaching out to say she was taking off. And then all of a sudden she's like, "I got to go. They're coming back." Why would it be like that? That makes me always wonder, like, why did she say that? She was fearful of them knowing that she stayed back to contact right before. I mean, I don't know how much time it had been before that actually was. Then we hear she had been in this yacht accident. It had to have been less than a month because it was around our birthdays, the last time I spoke to her on the phone. That always keeps coming to my mind. I heard that anxiousness in her voice. And I remember just being like, you know, the hanging up of the payphone and thinking, weird, like, that's just so weird. What's so sneaky? Like, I was just always like, oh, you two, everything's too good to tell me or share. Or, you know, I was just really angry at her at that point.
Thing about that call was the mention of she couldn't tell you, she couldn't give you details or provide any more information, but we were going to be proud of her. We were going to be surprised and proud.
And she hoped that we could reconnect after all these years. You know, she made it sound like it would be a long time. And if we reconnected, how would we reconnect? So to me, it almost is as if she knew something, because there was that part of it. And I keep coming back to that. Like, why did she tell me that? Why didn't I push it? Why didn't I pry? I just didn't know. I didn't think it was the last time I was going to hear from her, you know, first of all. Yeah, I just didn't have a clue. I didn't think she was sailing off on some big old yacht. I would have probably been so jealous and been like, dang, swing by and pick me up on your way through Newport or something, you know.
Kristen's story lives on thanks to the tenacity of her friends. You can buy Kristen, Can You Hear Me? By Teresa Letcher wherever you get your books. We, of course, recommend ThriftBooks, Bookshop.org, Books A Million, or your local bookstore. To stay up to date on Kristen's case, or if you have any information about Kristen, her time in Virginia City, Bob, John, Suzanne, or anything that might be relevant to the case, you can submit it to the Facebook page, Kristen, Can You Hear Me?
You know, there were elements as I wrote these that I thought maybe there's a bit here or piece here that maybe could be the truth, but them telling the truth, as you said, I think is far from factual.
Thank you again to Teresa and Rhonda for taking the time to speak with us and to share Kristen's story. How this dramatic tale isn't a documentary is astounding. So please share Kristen's story. It doesn't matter how long it's been, someone somewhere knows something.
I found these people on a Virginia City Facebook page who knew both Kristen and her mom. And of course, I about fell off my chair when this one gentleman said, yeah, I knew they were my, Kristen and her mother were my friends. And oh my gosh, you know, just trying to get information. And they just kind of, they participate slightly. But when I get into these specifics of, well, did Kristen know Bob? Was she dating Bob, as people said? Or was she dating John? Because these people introduced themselves as Bob and Sherry were married, and John was Sherry's dad. And, you know, what story did Kristen know? And if she was dating somebody, which one, what, you know, and you start getting into, you know, the twisted tales. And
then did she find out all of this and then think, what the heck is going on? That's what I think. Did she find that out at too late?
I did find a patron of the, a guy who said that he was a patron. He called himself a regular at the stage stop when John, Bob, and Suzanne owned it. And he said that they were introduced to them as John being Sherry Ann's father, and Sherry Ann was married to Bob. So he said that they it was not revealed to him until after the supposed sinking of the Freedom II that Sherry was actually Suzanne and was married to John, was John's wife. So as far as the folks in Virginia City who were at the stage stop, that's how they knew them. And then it came out when the story first broke that Kristen was dating Bob. So even that, so she knew that Bob was not married to Sherry Ann Suzanne. It's so confusing as to what she knew. So that's what I was trying to break through with this guy who said that he was friends with Kristen and her mom. How was Kristen introduced to them? Who did she think was married to whom? And they're very hesitant to go beyond, yeah, I knew them, and yeah, this is how I knew them, and yeah, I hung out at the stage stop and that kind of thing. So it's kind of strange. I know it's been a long time, and maybe they just don't want to get involved anymore. It's hard to know really what to even ask for, because you'd hope by this point in time, anybody who knew would have stepped up by now. So I think just kind of commiserating and sharing information is what we have and where we are right now. You know, I've had this wallowing around in my brain for 43, this November will be 44 years. So
yeah, I can really see how it ended up on Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh yeah.
Not just the unsolved part, but the intricacies mm-hmm. of all the movements and all the scams and all the fraud.
Well, and it's interesting. There's actually kind of some issues with the Unsolved Mysteries. And actually, Rhonda and myself are going to be on Coin this week, and we will have that up for you guys to watch. And we're going to be talking about everything that they're doing with the case. And one of the things they're doing is trying to track down all of the pieces of the Unsolved Mysteries segment, because each version that aired was kind of different. And through the years, they edited out some of the information about the trio because they had been caught, or some of the info about Kristen because they were focused on the trio. So they're really trying to compile that to have this kind of succinct, solid story.
When it's not at all.
Well, right. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, so it's fascinating.
It can't be boiled down.
No. Honestly, I think Teresa and I could have sat on the call for hours going through each scenario. It's and you can make up as many as you want, because there's nothing proving anything.
Yeah, there's nothing on the other end. So you can, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, here's this piece, or this person definitely saw Kristen on the boat and saw this happen. Why would they murder her? I think I personally lean toward that they did do something to harm her. I think maybe she found out all of the stuff going on, and she just doesn't seem like that kind of person to be comfortable with it. I'm curious your thoughts. I know it's a lot and you just heard it all. And so it's a lot to digest, but just, you know, your first response to it.
It sounds a lot to me like a young person taken in by con artists.
Mm-hmm.
They probably promised her the world, an adventure, the best of all things. For some reason, I mean, was it, I don't know if it was sexual, or it's just hard to tell what was going on there.
Right.
What benefit for her? I mean, hopefully other than the trip.
Right.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense why she would be there.
And
especially if they're going to commit a major fraud like that, why you'd want them there. Another person.
Yeah.
Another witness.
That's a very good point.
I go back and forth too. I need proof and science and evidence, and there is none as far as Kristen is concerned in this story. But could they have murdered her? Gosh, I don't know why. If they were friends, why would you invite her to go along only to kill her? And I do think there's a difference between liars and thieves and murderers, but maybe they crossed that line. It could have happened. I've had people tell me, well, yeah, she's gone. They murdered her. That was part of the inspiration for writing the book, too, because I would be with people and say, well, tell me how that happened. Tell me that story. Tell me what you think. And so I just ended up writing it for myself. But murder, I think that somehow she's gone. There was an accident, maybe in the something else, my sixth scenario, which is very brief. But maybe they murdered her, or maybe she's still alive. I really don't know. And on different days, I all feel different things, but it's just because we have no evidence or proof. that speaks to anything happening in any of those directions.
I just can't make any there's no common sense anywhere I go. I need to make it make sense. And so I think, okay, she left with them. We know for sure she was on that yacht, right? We know she was on that yacht. They saw her leave with them. So we know that. So from then, I'm just like, I don't believe what they claim happened then. I think the two guys jumped in and we're going to fake it. This is where I struggle, because I struggle with Kristen being aware of this. So I think maybe they did talk her into it. I don't know how, maybe because she's naive and young, and I don't know, but, and because the woman could sail without the guys, maybe they just took off and they went wherever they ended up meeting them at later. I don't know if before that they got rid of Kristen, you know, I don't know if they got rid of her after. I just think it's very weird that they've all three been seen, but she's never been seen. So, but then I'm like, why would they murder her? Why? Like, what would be their point? They didn't benefit from murdering her. So was it an accident? Did she fall over? Did she OD? You know, was she on something that we didn't know about? You know, I start thinking about the last time I saw her. There was a brief conversation we had. Now, she had hurt her ankle, and I think she had come back for surgery or something. I don't remember what happened, but she was here because her insurance was through her dad, and she had to have that done here. And she mentioned something about cocaine. And all growing up, Kristen was like anti-everything. Like, we were pot smokers, but, you know, as far as I knew, we never did much of anything else. And so she was like mentioning that back way before, you know, and I was just like, so later I thought, did she try it? Like, was that something that they maybe introduced her to? Like, who was she with? I mean, did she know that the story behind all of the confusion about that whole thing? I don't know, honest to God, I really, really don't. That's why we're here. I don't know what happened. I've talked to psychics. I've had dreams where all of a sudden she's there and I'm like, what the fuck? Where have you been? I don't know. I really don't know. I have no clue. I just feel like somebody has to know something. You know, the more we get people talking about it, like, I know, for instance, that Suzanne and did go and continue, like, they had to have talked about it. Like, somebody, I'm hoping it just has been long enough and that maybe they're all gone and that maybe somebody else will be sympathetic and say something what I'm hoping. And I'm just so thankful Teresa was able to do this. You know, I would have never been able to accomplish it. And she did such a great job and it's just such a great thing. And maybe someday we'll be able to actually go have a plaque for her or a bench in her memory or something, you know.
Like I said, the kismet of the timing, it is crazy to me that this episode is coming out the day before her anniversary. And I didn't know the dates. I didn't look at the calendar. I'd been talking to Teresa for a long time and it was fine. Like, hey, this week works to do this. And then we looked and we're like, oh my gosh, it's the anniversary. That is just bizarre. So
please help us solve this.
Yeah. Just if anyone was in Virginia City 40 years ago, if anyone knew her in school back in the day, if anyone else also got letters, if you knew the guys, if you were in San Francisco and you were a boat person and you knew these dudes, anything. Or more likely, you got ripped off trying to sell a boat to these guys. Find that Facebook page, Kristen, Can You Hear Me? And that's Teresa running that page. And if you have any information, even those little things, it doesn't always have to be, here's the key to the case. You know, here's the piece of evidence that solves it. It can be a memory or a photo or just anything you guys shared. That helps too. He was a former cop turned private investigator.
Private investigator. That's an investment alligator. That's a new Fidelity mascot.
Hello, I'm the investigator. Give me your money. Ah. Chomp, chomp. Death roll.
I lived in California for 27 years and I'm still kind of, I still marvel that certain states are so close to other states.
When
Nevada like touches.
When I remember that Nevada touches Oregon, it sends a chill through my spine because seem right.
It's not.
It's like, well, no, Nevada's much farther south.
It's down by California's foot.
There's Utah should be in there or something.
Was there a Freedom One?
Not that I know of. Not in the story. So I don't know if that's a kind of like a license plate thing. Like, oh, Freedom One is taken.
Yeah. You know, I never really thought about the name of your boat. Probably has to be registered.
I think. Well, I would assume so, depending on the size or the location.
Yeah. Are we talking a catch?
if we're talking catch.
A catch or a canoe.
You got to register that catch. Hoagie in a boat, make it float. A week before they set sail. Oh, shit. It's a comma, not a period.
French kiss me, daddy.
Exactly. It would take until 10 years.
Montreal? This is Monty Hall.
Farrell,
Arufalim?
Horrible laugh. I'm sorry. I was trying not to cough.
Jesus.
Do you know what? No time.
Just don't laugh, okay? I don't want it. I don't want it.
Yeah.
In December 1982, the stage shop shall...
If they would just commit, you got to commit. You just got to commit to the bit. Can't be like, I'm hypothermic. Your lips ain't blue, bitch.
Exactly.
Maybe we should probably contact some sort of shady gold smelter. To see if they're...
Did you ever receive a bow full of gold from someone?
We should search to see if there are any clowns in Virginia City known for performing with pieces of gold.